Okay, so this morning we left off with Esther chapter, we finished Esther chapter 7, right? Okay, so let's, basically the last three chapters is kind of the epilogue of Esther. It's basically telling us what happened with this decree that was made against the Jews. Let's turn to Esther chapter 8. Well, before we go on, anybody have any questions or anything? Oh, yeah, Benny. Oh, yes, go. Okay. Anybody have any questions on Esther that we covered so far? Okay, Esther chapter 8. First part of Esther chapter 8 is talking about how on that day that Haman was hanged, the house of Haman was given to Esther, so she had charge over his descendants. And then Esther revealed that Mordecai was also her relative. So then the king took off his signet ring and gave it to Mordecai. And then Esther appointed Mordecai over the house of Haman. Okay. So, indeed, how the tables turn. Okay. Mordecai now was in charge of them. If we jump ahead to chapter 9, verse 7. Anybody good with names? Esther chapter 9, verse 7. Who likes to pronounce names in the Bible? Okay, let's do Hansen. Hansen, please read verse 7, and 8, and 9. Esther chapter 9, verse 7 through 10. Yeah. Wait. Esther chapter 9. Yeah, Esther chapter 9. Jumping ahead, right? Esther chapter 9, verse 7 through 10. Yep. Okay, so you can see later on, the 10 sons of Haman, I think they still harbored animosity towards the Jews, especially like Mordecai was, you know, over in charge of their house now. So the day that was originally appointed for the Jews to be killed, they still went out to go and, I think they went out. I think it's implied that they went out to try to go and kill the Jews, and then the Jews killed them instead. Because as we'll later learn, the Jews later, they passed a law that they could fight back. Right, they could fight back. So I think these people attacked them, and that's why they fought back and killed these 10 sons of Haman. So the fate of Haman's family was really sad. Okay, what eventually happened. Hatred took over Haman's life, and then that hatred also wound up destroying the rest of the family. Okay, let's go back now to Esther chapter 8, verse 3. Esther chapter 8, verse 3. This is a little bit subtle, but this is another time that Esther risked her life to see the king. And we don't know exactly how long after Haman was killed, but it could be the same day, could have been a couple days later, a couple weeks later. But the reason why we know that it was also risky because the king held out his golden scepter towards Esther. So what we can see is that Esther had grown in as a person, grown in maturity. Of course, this time was less risky than the first time because the first time was it had never been done before. It was her first time doing it. This is her second time. But still, it was a risk, right? It's the Persian law that if you see the king without an appointment, without him summoning you, then you could be killed. So in verse 3, Esther spoke again with the king, falling down on his feet, imploring him with tears to counteract the evil that Haman, the Agagite, and the scheme which he had devised against the Jews. And the king held out the golden scepter towards Esther, so Esther arose and stood before the king. And then from what we read in this paragraph, Esther basically asks for the law of Haman to be revoked, because how can she endure to see this great evil come upon her people? Okay, so she speaks up for her people again. Because I think the conclusion from chapter 7 was really like, it wasn't completely resolved, right? The conclusion of chapter 7 was the person who devised this plan, he died. But the plan still was in effect. So chapter 8 is about how they would counteract the plan. So in verse 7 through 8, King Ahasuerus allows Queen Esther and Mordecai to draft up whatever they want to counteract this law. And they can seal it with the signet ring. Okay. So Persian law back then, you can read here in Esther, you can also see in the book of Daniel. Whenever something was sealed by the ring, could it be revoked? Can't be revoked. It's basically set in stone, you can say. Right? So they could not exactly just remove what Haman had wrote in the first place. But what they did was, let's jump to verse 11 now. What Esther and Mordecai signed into law instead was what? By these letters, the king permitted the Jews who were in every city to gather together, protect their lives, to destroy, kill, and annihilate all the forces of any people or province that would assault them, both little children and women, and to plunder their possessions. Okay. So on the day that was set for the massacre, they can now take up arms, gather together, assemble, have a strategy, go and protect themselves and kill anyone who was going to kill them. They also even had the right to take those people's possessions. Okay, so that was, in effect, how they counteracted the original law. Okay, and then this letter was sent through all the 127 provinces in the whole kingdom, each in their own language, so that the people knew, the Jews also knew, that they could protect themselves. And from the rest of chapter 8, basically just talking about Mordecai was honored, right? After this whole event, Mordecai was very high-ranking official now, and Jews in general were very happy and relieved that they could fight for themselves. There was a holiday. Okay. Yeah, because now they could survive. Okay. Any questions on chapter 8? I don't think there's too much to expand on chapter 8. I think it's just the fact that Esther continued to mature as a person. Right, and risk her life again. Any thoughts, questions? Chapter 8? Okay, chapter 9. Chapter 9. Chapter 9 is talking about how the Feast of Purim came to be. So, about 9 months later, in the 12th month, the month of Adar, on the 13th day, the time came for the king's command and his decree to be executed. So, indeed, the enemies of the Jews, when they had hoped to overpower the Jews, the opposite occurred, in that the Jews themselves overpowered those who hated them. So all the Jews gathered and basically protected themselves, but it especially mentions how they did not touch the plunder. Okay, they also killed the 10 sons of Haman, did not touch the plunder. And after the 10 sons of Haman were killed, Esther also even requested that the next day they could hang them, the corpses, right, on the gallows. So Esther requested that on the day that the attack was supposed to be, they could fight for themselves. Esther also requested that the next day they could continue to do the same, because maybe not all the enemies were annihilated. So for 2 days in a row, the Jews were very victorious. In just the city of Shushan itself, 500 died on the first day, and I think 300 died the second day. And then in terms of the whole kingdom, verse 16 says they killed 75,000 of their enemies and did not lay a hand on the plunder. So originally, the 13th day of the month of Adar was supposed to be a very sad day for the Jews. It became a day of victory. And the day of the 14th day was also probably supposed to be a day of mourning, right? But it became a day of feasting and gladness for the Jews, because they were able to rest from their enemies. So on the 14th day and on the 15th day, they had a feast. And this was called the Feast of Purim. Let's read Esther chapter 9, verse 18. Esther chapter 9, verse 18. Vivian. Okay. Verse 19 as well. So this is how they kept celebrated this day of defeating their enemies. They would feast, they would also give presents to one another. And then Mordecai later made this like a national holiday for the Jews. This is found in verse 20 and onward. So verse 23, it says, the Jews accepted the custom which they had begun as Mordecai had written to them. Verse 24, because Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the enemy of all the Jews, had plotted against the Jews to annihilate them and had cast pure, that is the lot, to consume them and destroy them. Verse 25, but when Esther came before the king, he commanded by letter that this wicked plot which Haman had devised against the Jews should return on its own head, and that he and his son should be hanged on the gallows. Verse 26, so they called these days Purim, after the name Pur. Therefore, because of all the words of this letter, what they had seen concerning this matter and what had happened to them. Okay, so verse 27, the Jews established and imposed upon themselves and their descendants and all who would join them, that without fail they should celebrate these 2 days every year according to the written instructions and according to the prescribed time. Okay. So even till this day, 2016, next year the same thing, your Jewish friends who are religious, they will celebrate the day of the Feast of Purim, okay, on the on the 14th and 15th day of the month of Adar. 14th and 15th day of month of Adar. 13th was a day that they were supposed to be massacred. 14th and 15th now became their feast days. Yes. What month is Adar? Like we just looked up this year is yesterday night. We looked it up. It was in March, right? March 23rd and 24th. But because the Hebrew calendar is a lunar calendar, kind of like the Chinese calendar, so the months sometimes don't line up exactly with our months. Just like how Chinese New Year sometimes it's in January and sometimes in February, right? So let's just check next year, right? Purim. Okay, we want to do Google?
Yeah.
Okay. When is Purim celebrated in 2017?
Evening of Saturday, March 11th, 2017, and ends in the evening of Sunday, March 12th, 2017.
Okay, so next year it's still in March, but like a couple weeks earlier than this year. Okay, so it looks like March is typically when Purim is celebrated. 2018, March 1 and 2. 2019, March 21st and 22nd. Year 2020, March 10th and 11th. So I guess it's mostly in March. Maybe it's seldomly it falls in February. Okay. Any other questions? Anybody have Jewish friends? Huh? Okay, hands down. How many do not have Jewish friends? Oh, okay. No problem. Are there a lot of Jews in Toronto? Oh, there are. Okay. There. You can let them know, like, hey, next March, hey, how is Purim? So this is one of the feasts that's outside of the seven feasts that were mentioned in the five books of Moses, right? In the books of Moses, how many feasts? There's seven feasts, right? You know? Do you guys know them? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the most important one is what? Okay, yeah. Passover, Feast of Passover, Feast of Unleavened Bread, Feast of First Fruits. That's all almost together in the first month, right? Then you have Feast of Weeks, which is Pentecost, in the middle, the fourth one, right? Then you have the Feast of the Day of Atonement, the Feast of Tabernacles, and the Feast of Trumpets. Those three, the order, I kind of forgot, though. But anyway, seven. That's mentioned in the Old Testament. Maybe one day when you go to NYTS or... Yeah, I think NYTS, they'll probably go over those, right? But that was what the Jews had been used to keeping every single year. But now, because of this event that happened during the Persian Empire, they began a new feast called Purim, and the Jews still keep it to this day, right? It doesn't really have any religious meaning, but it basically celebrates God's victory over their enemies so many hundreds of years ago. There's another feast that the Jews keep that's outside of the seven and the in the Old Testament too. Anybody know that one? This one's like more famous. Hanukkah. Yeah, Hanukkah. The Feast of Lights. Right, Hanukkah. Yeah, Jeopardy. Yeah. And do you guys know when Hanukkah started to be celebrated? Yeah, I kind of forgot the details too, but It started to occur, they started to keep the Feast of Lights. By the way, this is mentioned in the Bible too. This is mentioned in the New Testament. If you go to, sometimes also known as the Dedication, Feast of the Dedication. If you go to John chapter 10, verse 22. John chapter 10, verse 22. Let us ask Paul. John 10, 22. Okay, Feast of Dedication is mentioned in the Bible. It's also known as Hanukkah or the Feast of Lights. How did it start? It started in between the Old Testament and New Testament time, around 164 BC. Okay, so you don't see it in the biblical record. But what happened was that the temple had been desecrated by a ruler called Antiochus the IV Epiphanes. He really did horrible things in the temple. Okay. He desecrated the temple, and the Jews revolted against him and fought back. So about 3 years later, there was a great victory for the Jews, where they eventually won independence from the Rome. I think from the Romans, yeah, from whoever that was controlling them. They had a brief time of independence, and then when they rededicated the temple after it was desecrated, that is basically the Feast of Dedication, the Feast of Lights. They spent 8 days to rededicate the temple. Okay, so that's a little bit side story. Okay, so the general Jews, I guess, they keep 9 feasts now. Seven in the Torah, Purim, and then Hanukkah. Okay. So, I mean, you can also ask your Jewish friends, like what do they do? You can also get their point of view of things. I think it'd be interesting. You ever talk to your Jewish friends about the Bible? Or are your Jewish friends not religious? Huh? He's anti-God. Okay, yeah, a lot of Jews sometimes now, Jewish by blood, but they're very secular, right? They're atheists even. But anybody have any more religious Jews? Even wear the kippah or the yarmulke in school? Yeah. You can ask them about things. Okay, let's go back to Esther chapter 9. Esther chapter 9, the last part, verse 29 through 32, basically just shows how Queen Esther confirmed Mordecai's letters to establish this Feast of Purim. Okay, and then let's go to chapter 10. Chapter 10. Chapter 10, verse 1. And King Ahasuerus imposed tribute on the land and on the islands of the sea. Now all the acts of his power and his might, and the account of the greatness of Mordecai, to which the king advanced him, are they not written in the book of the chronicles of the kings of Media and Persia? Verse 3. For Mordecai the Jew was second to King Ahasuerus, and was great among the Jews, and was well received by the multitude of his brethren, seeking the good of his people, and speaking peace to all his countrymen. So this is just final words talking about what happened to Mordecai. Mordecai advanced greatly, was second to the king, and was well received by his people. So this is also a good encouragement and example to us. Like when somebody climbs high to a high position, sometimes they wind up getting puffed up, sometimes their personality changes, sometimes this type of success gets to them. And then they may start to, like, people will start to sense that the person's changed, and usually in a negative way. But Mordecai, even though he advanced so greatly among the Jews and also in the empire, it says that he was received by the multitude of his brethren. People enjoyed him. People liked him. And how did he use his power, his influence? He was seeking the good of his people.